Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Welcome back, and it is now or never. As as we keep on looking at what the heck's going on, we don't see anyone that is actually having the open discussion about what's going on and why is our government's not complying to the Constitution. It's our problem. It is a constitutional crisis. We're working on a resolution to introduce into a few of the different legislatures. And when we have it done, we'll try to get it up on our website. Currently, I have no idea why, but as the beginning of the year has kind of passed, and we are now in a situation where things have changed with our ISP, where our connection is not reliable anymore. And I mean, it's nothing on my end. And so I'm just, it goes with my cell phone. It's just like, if they can't deplatform us, then they're definitely interrupting us, because getting things posted up on our website should not be this difficult. And so, because we haven't been able to post the last five episodes, last week's episodes, nor this week's episodes have been posted. So it's becoming a struggle. I'm going to have to call the ISP and have them explain to me what they did, if they did something. And I'm hoping it's them, something that they did, because they've already affected us before. If you're using an ISP or you're looking for an ISP, I wouldn't necessarily recommend IONUS. That's who we're using, and we're not happy with them. They basically blew us out of the water on some of our email systems. And anyway, this is why I say that if there's anybody out there that has the money, like the guy that's shutting down Hobby Lobby, or not shutting it down, but selling out and having nothing to do with it anymore, if he had the money, boy, buying an ISP service business for conservatives and putting it in a conservative state, so where he doesn't have to worry about the federal government coming after him, then I'd say, you know, that's what we need. We need some good quality platform or ISP where we can actually have our hosting, our domains hosted, our email services, the fundamental services that you use for streaming and everything else. See, the problem is, most people don't realize this, but most of the things that are coming to you, such as, you know, what Trump is doing, and so, where is that being posted? Is that being hosted on his own brick and mortar, excuse me, servers? Is it being hosted in somebody's cloud like Amazon? We've already seen Amazon, Google, Apple, all of these corporations that have large cloud computing areas and centers all across the world, they're actually going after and shutting down. Shoot, DirecTV has shut down One American News, and they've now shut down, it looks like, Newsmax. And so they are trying to make the conservative news, the conservative narrative, the alternate to what is available to the people, obsolete. They're basically saying there's only going to be one form of messaging, and it's how we want to control it. And the question is, why is it that Fox News is being spared? And I believe that's because you're going to see changes over time. We've already seen Fox already kowtow and get rid of what we would consider hardcore conservatives with Bill O'Reilly and so forth. So we have to start recognizing that it is going to get more sparse and it's going to get harder for you to get informed. So this is why I can't emphasize how important it is and why we are actually making impacts. You can make impacts. When I say we, it's not even me. It's not even I doing this. There's a small group of guys in Wyoming that went and petitioned their county commissioners, and their county commissioners balked and said, we're not going to do this. And so we would love to have this story to you, but go look at Campbell County and go look for commissioners balk at, or actually, let me give you the line, the precise name of the article that you can go look for, and the title of the article is Campbell County Will Investigate Commissioners' Responsibilities for Petition. Now, I don't know why because this is a First Amendment petition, not just petition, right? So the newspaper really did identify the type of petition, but the newspaper is actually calling out these commissioners who say, well, we don't think we're responsible to have to, you know, reply to First Amendment petitions. Folks, right now I can tell you, your state legislatures, if you went in and gave them a First Amendment petition, they'd ignore you. And as a matter of fact, they would do nothing. Now, here it is, a right that's protected under the Constitution, and your government and your court systems are ignoring you. The only way we're going to get these rights back, and the only way we're going to actually be able to take our country back, along with our government, is by using First Amendment petitions at the local level. You've got to get people at the local level to understand that we don't have to let them do these things, that it's our responsibility to hold them accountable. So one of the things I need to tell you, and I'll try to remember to tell you again, we're not going to be doing Feedback Friday tomorrow. It's going to be kind of a surprise. And so even I don't know what it's going to be. But anyway, what that means is that there's things happening, and we're going to be actually hopefully reporting on Monday some good information, some feedback from county commissioners and so forth. But bottom line, folks, if you exercise your faith, if you exercise what the good Lord gave us in this Constitution, as a matter of fact, it's not just in this Constitution, it was galvanized in this Constitution, the right of petition. This goes all the way back to the Magna Carta. It goes all the way back to when Adam and Eve left the Garden of Eden. The right of petition, we have been admonished and told many times to always to petition him. Well, in lieu of that, we also have the right and the responsibility to petition our government in holding it accountable. So, one other thing, actually a couple of things I want to do. We do have the YouTube channel, Reclaiming the Republic, so please go subscribe to that. And coming up, hopefully within the next couple of weeks, once we get on top of this, what I'll just say, legislative session and surge, we're trying to get some videos and trying to get a lot of stuff and content done and up and out so that we actually have it out there for you. We've got it on our website, and you can go listen to last year's constitutional course. If you are, what I basically do is read the Constitution and tell you what those things mean and tell you how these things are being violated. And so if you want to go to September 20th in the 2022 archive, podcast archives, that's where you'll find, you know, my covering the Constitution. We also have the color-coded Constitution up. Now, this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. We are covering natural law. But what I want to do, before we get into that, I usually have these monologues and so forth, but I don't want to take too much time away from natural law and what I want to provide you, because what I've got is an extrapolation of natural law out of my book, out of my first book, and I want to share that with you, because basically this is my view of natural law in my own words, and so we'll be hitting that today. But one of the things I want to actually present to you, because I think this is important, and this is a GRism. When I say a GRism, this is my own personal paradigm, philosophy, not necessarily doctrine, but, you know, kind of how I live. And it, right, wrong, or indifferent, there are certain things that we all need to do that gives us a better way of operating. And so if you're operating in a spiritual mode, spiritual tone, then I think everybody would benefit from, you know, living better, being more spiritual, being healthier. You know, how can we live better? And so I'm going to give you a cursory view of a gentleman by the name of, and some of you maybe have heard of, Dr. Duncan McDougall. Dr. Duncan McDougall did some experiments, and what he did, and I'm going to get into what he did and what happened historically, and I'm going to pose some questions and so forth for you. But what I want to do is I want to share this with you now. When you look, and when we talk about this, probably Monday, we'll go through this. When we talk about this on Monday, I want you to think between now and then, because I want you to have an overview of what this man did. This man in the medical industry, you know, in the medical science of the body and so forth, he was a doctor, and I forget, we'll get into what hospital and all of that he was at. It was in Massachusetts somewhere. But he postulated that there was this, you know, concept, what he thought, and he wanted to prove it. He wanted to prove that there was some possible tangible weight to a soul. Now, let me just tell you, in a GRism, I believe that God created all things. I believe he created the heavens and the earth. The Bible tells us so. And so why would I think otherwise? If he can create all of those things, and we know we're his creation as well, our life, our spirits, everything, he's created all, then I believe that if he created us spiritually, here's the question. In his creating us spiritually, did he actually create, is there some tangible material, molecules, elements, matter, there it is, matter. Is there matter to the human spirit? Well, McDougall thought that there was, and I'll tell you a little bit about it when we get back. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so here's this man by the name of Duncan McDougall, who's a doctor, and this is in the early 1900s. Now, some of these things I'm going to inject here, you know, when I actually get into the story, is some analysis of how I see things. But bottom line, if we believe that we were all created, then that must mean that there is something to the matter of that creation. I don't believe that we're just some, you know, even a one and zero creates matter onto, and it forms matter or it organizes matter on a disk, on a magnetic medium, or however we look at binaries and everything. So it is a formation of something, and I don't know what it is. These things are beyond me. But my point is this, that when I read this article a long, long time ago, and I heard this story, my father told me this story when I was a teenager, and I was just surprised that nobody ever talked about this. Here's a guy that was weighing people that were dying to find out if there was any weight loss when a person died. And he actually discovered that there was. And bottom line is, his hypothesis is the average soul weighs about 21 ounces. And so, or not 21 ounces, 21 grams. In other words, less than an ounce. And so here's my GR-ism. There is more evidence, by spiritual evidence through the Bible and so forth, that we were created. If that's the case, then there's probably some form of matter that was a part of our spiritual creation, that when the spirit entered into the body, that it actually, you know, creates this symbiotic link to the body, the brain, and everything else. We don't understand any of this. I'm not even going to tell you I understand any of this to that degree. But I will say this, that just like a body, you know, a body has the ability to get stronger, to become sedate or sedentary and become lethargic. What we do with ourselves, both physically and spiritually, I believe affects these things that God gave us, our body and our spirit. And as we, you know, become healthier and stronger, then, you know, with working out, exercise, and those types of things, then you can kind of see and do a lot more things. I think the same thing goes along with us spiritually. That I believe that when we do spiritual things and when we look and work in the context of spiritual things, and we start understanding that, you know, we kind of grow, we strengthen ourselves, I believe our spirituality has the ability to become stronger. And so the question is, and I just want to throw this out there, if a person becomes, you know, closer to Christ, and the closer you get to Christ, and the more you understand, you know, his plan, what he's doing, and the importance of all of these things, and, you know, you start understanding where you are and what you need to do, isn't there a good likelihood that that means that you're developing? So does that mean that your spirit can actually increase in matter? If you spiritually grow and you were so profoundly moved throughout your life in many different cases spiritually, does that not mean that your spirit could actually obtain? So in other words, let's just say 21 grams is the average. Maybe somebody that was really, really spiritual, like maybe Peter or Moses, maybe they actually had 25 grams when they passed away. Maybe the weight of their soul was greater. So here's the thing. If if you're looking for ways to, you know, improve your health, to, you know, lower your weight, you know, get exercise and so forth, why don't you include, because I should have done this. It actually came to me after the New Year's resolution, because we talk about goals and how to set effective goals on this show. At the very end of the year, we do that all the time. It probably would have been one of those things that I, you know, failed to do, but it's never too late to actually add a goal or to add some form of improvement in your life. And so what I would suggest is, if you have a goal, an objective of becoming healthier, if you're trying to actually get out and lose weight, these things that improve your life, physical life, your health, then why not add an objective to improve and to grow yourself spiritually by reading the scriptures on a daily basis. And actually, that's one of the things we can all do. But I believe you really grow more when you take, it's kind of like knowledge is power, right? It doesn't become power until it's exerted. I believe spiritually you grow more in helping or doing things that are actually helping his plan. I tell people, and I truly believe, you can tell me I'm wrong, I truly believe there's probably no greater cause to get involved in this life other than, you know, doing the proclamation and saving souls and that type of stuff. And we have, I think, plenty of people, and I believe there's plenty of churches that are out there saving souls, but I don't believe that there's enough people saving liberty. And I am telling you that liberty is essential to his plan, that we need an opportunity to hear the message, accept the message, and go become a part of his gospel. When we don't have liberty, like in China, then all of a sudden we can't save souls. We're heading down the path to where the ability to save a soul by, you know, proclaiming the gospel, teaching those things and so forth, is going to be withdrawn. We're going to be at a point where it, you know, like Islam does not allow any alternative teachings or a proselyting or anything like that. Same thing in China. There are plenty of countries that are moving in that direction, and you can see the secular movement. This is the whole thing. What we see here in America is a part of the overall plan to control the messaging, to control everything, so that you can no longer teach your children your Christian dogma. Hillary Clinton basically supported and asserted the importance of taking children and making sure, or basically having a social worker oversee the lives of all the children in your homes, so that they are not being filled with your religious dogma. She talks about this in her It Takes a Village. Folks, when they start setting up these types of programs, which is what we're seeing and what we're seeing in the education system, they're actually reforming and changing the fundamental spirituality of this earth for evil. And I think everybody's starting to see this. So what is important is that we restore liberty if we're going to restore the churches. If we're going to have a second awakening, we have to get the government out of telling us what we can believe and what we can, you know, how we can worship and those types of things, because that's precisely where they're going. And that's where we're going to end up. And if you don't see these threats, and I know everybody that listens to the show does, but we need to start getting more and more people to understand. And the best way for people to understand that their liberties are being lost is by showing them one by one in these petitions how this liberty is being lost, how America is being subjugated to foreign polities where the federal government had no authority to do that, to bring us into the UN and let the UN start creating these global laws that we have to comply to. They don't have the authority to submit us and subjugate us to the UN. And I even heard, forgive me, for I had to listen to Hannity. Hannity was talking to a guy, I have no idea, I think it was Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly, I think, was saying, we have to stay in the UN. We need to be in that UN. Are you kidding me, folks? Are you kidding me? America needs to actually set the standard. If nations want to come and be a participant in liberty, then there we go. But I think we have to retract. We have to get back on to becoming self-sufficient. We have to get out of the mercantile economic system that our government has assumed and get back to a free market and watch America explode. We know how many resources we have, and we can actually get access to these things because they're here in America. We have plenty of timber. We have plenty of land. we can no longer allow the, you know, the chem spraying and all of this crap, all everything that the globalists are doing. You need to read, and I need to get it up there, and you need to read my latest constitutional minute where I identify, and maybe that's what I'll do next week, because I identify the different warfare tactics that the federal government is exercising against the states and the people in this constitutional republic. In other words, they've actually taken and have a broad spectrum form of hostility, from economic to chemical to airborne to so forth and so on. We have the responsibility. I believe if you exercise in faith and you actually start helping people come to the knowledge of how important liberty is in being able to worship Him, then I believe that as we start acting, as we start doing these things, we're going to grow. And, you know, there's nothing better than, and I think there's nothing more pleasing to me, and the thing that really brings me joy is when I hear people and they're doing things. These gentlemen in Wyoming, the fact that what they're doing is leading in the local area to help people understand all these things that are threatening liberty. As we do those things, that's how we wake people up. And I truly believe that down the road, and as you do these things, you're going to grow. They're growing. And the question is, if what we're doing isn't just a physical exertion, but a spiritual exertion, then I truly believe that we actually may gain worth or may gain some more to the weight of our soul. We will be right back after this.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
What I'm really trying to say is how we live has an effect. It has an effect on our body, and I believe it has an effect on our spirit. But let me get into, you know, my view, my own words on natural law, or the law of nature and nature's God. Many historians attest to the fact that the Middle Ages was the time when natural law was formed and developed into our law. This law was the combination of laws of science, God's law, and man's law. It was law. It was called the laws of nature and nature's God. And at the end of the 18th century, secular progressives began perverting the name by calling it the natural law. Remember, Thomas Jefferson referred to this as the laws of nature and nature's God, thus creating, as they started perverting this and slowly separating the laws of nature and nature's God by dividing societal laws from God's laws, thus creating the doctrinal divide for giving credibility to socialism and communism. You have to remember, at the very beginning of this nation, the framers thought it repugnant and just an evil practice for the government to be involved in education, for the government to be involved in compassionate services such as welfare, and those types of things. This is because natural law, as a derivative of God's law, was universally accepted, which again gave leverage to progressives to divorce the connection to God from committing murder, bearing false witness, property rights, etc. In essence, the Platonist, or what you would call the communist, I call him the Platonist because it was Plato that developed and committed to pen and paper this concept of socialism, or in Plato's Republic, statism. In other words, and actually moving on, the Platonists were setting up their own oppressive government that would be married to their religion. They had to institute a religion to be a part of government. This is some of the things that they had learned a long time ago. The end was to bring all back full circle, where the state controls everything. This was the fundamental argument of the communist since Plato, ultimately controlling the means of production and consumption. See, most people think the communists only want to control the means of production. No, they also want to control the means of consumption, how you get it and your ability to buy it, your ability to consume it. On the extreme end of controlling consumption is when the state will begin to control births. Communist countries today are actually doing this and still doing this. Consequently, our once enlightened society has dug up horrific practices of eugenics, abortion, and infanticide, which is now being done with the use of technology to terminate the birth of an unborn infant with the wrong gender. The penultimate, which is the one before the last, in other words, the second to last thing that they're going to do for the secular progressives is to transition all governments into a centralized state. The ultimate end is to unify all states into a single governing body. This idea has been around for a very long time, and to substantiate the resurgence of this idea at the end of the 13th century and the beginning of the 14th, one only needs to read Dante's De Monarchia. If you look at the UN today, folks, that is the unifying of states into a centralized state. It is not the end yet. We have not had the single state governing body form yet. This work that was done by Dante in Demarchia, along with other ancient texts such as Plato's, has been the catalyst for the initial concept of the Illuminati, socialism, communism, and all forms of government that violates individual liberty and individual sovereignty. Taking the Enlightenment era even further, the Magna Carta was a significant catalyst for the Enlightenment era, which began around the 13th century. This is where King John had to proclaim specific liberties to the people and accepted the people's assertion that his will and laws would not be arbitrary. In other words, his will and laws had to be written down. Now look at England today and you tell me how well they're following this concept of written down or these specific laws and the rule of law. The English governance included a common law system where precedence in ruling and jurisdiction was established based on God's law. This is why even when we look at our traffic courts has been based on precedence and common law. And so this governance by the British monarchs was the beginning of galvanizing individual liberties to the citizens. These were not absolute liberties, and eventually the people of England revolted in 1688 and overthrew King James. This was the epoch in Britain for the beginning of the Bill of Rights, which set the stage for significant events in the evolution of enlightenment that led to Thomas Jefferson and our framers' interpretation of the laws of nature and nature's God. During the beginning of enlightenment, scholars read and wrote about natural law, including the early founders of this philosophy. as listed in the beginning of my book. Thomas Aquinas, Francisco Suarez, Richard Hooker, Thomas Hobbes, Hugo Grotius, Samuel van Poelendorf, John Locke, Francis Hutcheson, Jean-Jacques Varlamecu, Vattel, and even Bacon, Blackstone, and Montesquieu, just to name a few. Though they began to discover that Aristotle was wrong about all of the scientific laws, his philosophy that emphasized the distinction of nature from man's law, which was the law of nature, remained consistent where man's law changed. This also applied to God's law and its consistencies. These pioneers of natural law argued that men possessed a much higher capacity, one that would discern in reason, a consciousness that could not be constrained on a physical plane and was capable of knowing good from evil, thus giving every man a freedom to choose right from wrong. Even societies and cultures that had disparate religions and philosophical ideas and ideologies were capable of determining good from evil as it pertained to both culture and to God's law that were biblically based. For an example, thou shalt not kill. Thus giving man the moral freedom to choose when not subjected to austere oppressions or handicapped with mental abnormalities, whether they be normal, natural, drug-induced, or what have you. Over time, these laws took social prominence where men were awakening to the reality of their liberties being constrained or taken. In essence, these laws were constant and obviously the laws or boundaries that God had provided as a framework of his gospel, an ideology that is in conflict with both natural and God's laws. Where is homosexuality within that? So in other words, a direct conflict of God's law and the laws of the land at that point in time was homosexuality. For illustration purposes, the following subsection, which I get into in my book, provides examples of the conflict of homosexuality in society as a sin and a detriment is provided for consideration. Because when we really look at it, you have to understand that natural law, the laws of nature and nature's God, when you have something enter into society that becomes a detriment, that becomes a problem, then and you start embellishing on that, then you actually start decaying or you start having an adverse effect on your society. Oh yeah, homosexuality is this addictive behavior. Sexual deviance is the antithesis of human survival, and the propagation of the human race is paramount. Historically, deviant sexual practices, such as homosexuality, begin to rear its head as a tolerated amusement during times of opulence. I want to take an aside here. I was taking a flight back to D.C., or maybe I was flying out of D.C. Nevertheless, I was taking a business flight, and I was in the business section. And right behind me were two women, didn't think that they knew each other the way they were exposing themselves and to each other, how they were talking and explaining what they were doing. But one of these ladies was talking about her son who had effeminate behavior, and she had pictures of her son dressed up as a girl and so forth. We're talking about a toddler, young little kid, and how this woman was just found it so fascinating that her little boy was becoming her little girl. Folks, when you hear that type of amusement, what I just said has come to fruition. Homosexuality or deviant sexual practices such as homosexuality begin to rear its head as a tolerated amusement during times of opulence. Within the paradigm that is shared by most historians, the family is the building block for society. Every historian acknowledges this. As a matter of fact, Ludwig von Mises, in his book Socialism, talks about the different societies and how they changed their paradigms around the family. In other words, there were matriarch and patriarch societies. And he pointed out that all matriarchal societies failed. All societies that went down this homosexual, non-building, not non-family nucleus society failed as well. These types of societies have existed. People said, oh, we're going to do this better than what God intended. And each time they have failed. In context of the term family, we're going to go into a break. But in context of the term family, a family refers to the genetic background of a person's father and mother and their heritage, as well as their health and the normalcies that are passed on in their genes, or I should say the standards that are passed on, whether they be disease or good health. We'll be right back after this promo.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so getting back to this macro view of the laws of nature and nature's God, a plethora of historians discuss religions and societies who embraced all forms of debauchery, rejecting the family and poverty, all of which are extinct. And you really do need to read Ludwig von Mises' Socialism. The key word is extinct, which is precisely how Mises referred to these perverted ideologies. As a society which has risen to its heights of enlightenment, of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, are we going to embrace the destructive ideologies and selfish conceits that have destroyed other previous societies? Of course. Unless we place these practices into proper perspective, a perspective that labels these acts as destructive to oneself and society. As progressives have monopolized the classrooms, their paramount goal since the early days of the Fabian movement was to debase procreation as a mere physical act and destroy the family. They have been able to do this by obscuring historical data and facts and encouraging sexual indulgence. This is where we are today. They're even going beyond that. Not just indulgence, but downright perversion. Consequently, as long as society continues to allow progressives to monopolize the narrative, ignoring history and denying the existence of empirical data from a plethora of previous cultures and societies, the high impressionable youth will adhere to the progressive script. And this is being proven. Again, censorship of information and projecting a biased narrative to promote one's end has been very successful practices for thousands of years. The concept of homosexual parents should be an insult to practicing heterosexuals. Actually, no. Let me get this right. The concept of homosexual parents should be an insult to practicing homosexuals by embracing the repulsive byproduct of heterosexuality, in other words, children, as an insult to their practice. Because, folks, when you engage in something that is not intended for children, then it should be an insult to actually have children or to basically want children. But the fact of the matter is they understand, the evil truly understands, that if they can subject children to these types of ideologies and paradigms, then they have a greater chance of destroying us. This is why they had to be able to get children adopted into homosexual families and so forth. As a technologically advanced society, we may have harnessed technology to do amazing things. However, we cannot deny the nature and natural law of children and family, which because we can technically kill a person on an operating table and bring them back to life, just like in the movie Flatliners, simply for the experience, does not mean this is a good or moral thing to do or to practice in our society. Again, children are a byproduct of heterosexuality in nature. Furthermore, homosexuality defies the makeup of the aforementioned family tree and prevents and perverts the posterity of future generations. If continued, there will not be a posterity for those genetic lines unless one continues to trace the genetics of the egg and sperm donors for their medical history, genetic traits, and potential mates. Not doing this could result in brothers and sisters unknowingly breed in a test tube. There is a plethora of works which illustrates that the greatest joy in life comes from a family overcoming the challenges in life. Therefore, one can understand the desire to partake in this, since well over a millennia, everyone's origins fundamentally have come from the components of a family. This is not to say that orphans or adopted children are not a part of the family. They are. They, unfortunately, are the results of a man and woman who did not adhere to enlightened behavior. For those clinging onto the genetic fate, this would be considered a design to challenge one's character, or we are going to accept that all men want to commit adultery, and so we should just accept adultery. In contradiction to the common genetic assertion, the APA, the American Psychological Association, originally asserted that homosexuality was genetic. However, they recently recanted this hypothesis in May of 2009. This recanting was far more secretive than their original assertion in the 70s. Obviously, the APA did not want this word to get out and set the record straight. One would think that this would have been newsworthy. However, the news has been suppressed by the mainstream media since it does not lend to their agenda. The intent of the original argument was used to generate sympathy and acceptance for homosexuality. Paradoxically, though sexual freedom was purported to be under the umbrella of liberal thinking, progressive ideologies such as these have been proven to be detriment to society due to the inherent self-interest and self-created nature and their conflict with the laws of nature and nature's God, as well as God's law. Think about it, folks. When we had that cultural revolution, all they were doing was basically diving into debauchery. It wasn't about enlightenment. It was all about self-centered nature and selfish desires. Therefore, these are not liberal in the classic definition because it is a violation of natural and God's laws. Such is the way for all special interest groups who seldom care of the cost to or the consequences on society. They only care that their means are implemented to reach their end, and in this case, the end is to eradicate alternate ideas and philosophies of God's law and the laws of nature and nature's God. Because of the effects of open sexual freedom has on society, one can see the consequences of this violation of natural law, where one cannot physically procreate and build the family in their chosen state. Again, one must subvert natural law to acquire the desired outcome. Humans are capable of comprehending the consequences of their actions when they engage in this behavior that violates natural law and God's law. They are, in essence, in the act of denying these laws. Again, humans differ from all other animals due to cognitive capabilities and understand the consequences of their decisions. To emphasize what individual liberty is in society, again, it is congruent and in congruence with freedom, with the responsibility and accountability of the person. Therefore, the result of humans trying to free themselves from the consequences of their choices only ends up destroying individual liberties. Paradoxically, secular progressives use freedom as a portal to commit this atrocity and are counting on the immoral society to give them a pass, not understanding the consequences. The axiom of liberty is this, and you'll find this on my Moby Strip Press page. Civil society is wholly dependent upon the symbiosis between the fundamental principles of liberty, freedom or free agency, responsibility, and accountability. When these principles are balanced and in harmony with the individual citizens, liberty will then act as a catalyst in elevating synergy within the community and society. These synergies will lead to stronger spiritual well-being, greater productivity, and improved health and improved development of wealth. Now, folks, when we really look at society and we see how this embracing of these perversions have been so destructive, what more do we need to do? When we really want to understand the laws of nature, nature's God, or the natural law, as people call it today, we have to look at it as anything that actually derails us, that takes us away from furthering our enlightenment. The key factor in enlightenment is discipline, which means self-discipline and societal discipline. In other words, the way we have to move forward, we have to educate our way out of addictive behavior. We can't legislate our way out of this. We can't be passing blue laws. We have to educate and prove by using historical data, the empirical data that exists, how many lives are destroyed by engaging in pornography. How many lives are, you know, and becoming addicted to gambling, gaming, sexual deviance, all of these things. There's never a case where everybody that participates in these destructive behavior actually gets ahead in life, where they have successes and they don't have a wake of sorrow in their trail. Folks, this is why this is all so important when we start really looking at spiritual, the spirituality entwined with this cause of liberty. This is a spiritual pursuit, but it is one on the individual basis where we're fighting for everyone else to have the liberty to do what they need to do. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.